everybody. Welcome to a Tuesday edition, Ye Olde Bulldog Hour. Captain Gonzo alongside as always. And as always here until 3 o'clock, then it's time for Christopher Gabriel and Gonzo CGP. And for us, it is a basketball week that will get started for both the men's and women's teams tomorrow. I want to mention this again up front. The men's team will be in San Jose. Women's team at home against the Spartans at SMC, 6 o'clock for the women, and the men will tip at 7, 6:15, the pre for the men on 9:40 tomorrow, and for the women, Gonzo will have the game for you, 5:45 with the pregame. And it's very interesting, and I'll talk to Gonzo about this tomorrow, also talk to Q about what's going on with the men's team. You had a women's team that as recently as a week and a half ago looked to be headed for a top seed showdown with San Jose. I mean, the Spartans playing great ball at that point on the women's side. The only loss they had had in conference was the comeback by Fresno State, which is kind of a redundant statement about this women's team, because every time you turn around, they're coming back to win in the fourth quarter, although they did have that big blowout at Colorado State and, of course, at home against UNLV. They were a very comfortable winner. But as far as what San Jose State has done in the last week and a half has changed everything, because they're now so far back of the Bulldogs that it's a formality that Jamie White and company will be the one seed. But as we've mentioned over and over again, it's going to take winning the conference tournament. So if you want to make sure that you deliver a message to the Spartans, it would be a good idea to win tomorrow night. We know this. The Fresno State women's team will open play at noon on the first Monday, March 2nd, first Monday of March, conference tourney a week early for the men and women's teams. So go out to SMC tomorrow, see if they can continue this undefeated streak in conference. Hope that they can move up some of the RPI ladders, but it still looks like you're going to have to win the whole thing. But you do want to make sure everybody knows that you are a club that just can't be beaten in conference. It can help you psychologically going into that tournament when you look to the NCAAs. For the men, the last hope they're going to have is to go to Las Vegas and to win four. We know that for sure. There's no way in the world they're going to be in the top five. And as we talked yesterday, it appears that they're locked into 8 and 9. They could fall to 10. It is highly unlikely they would end up at 7. But the issue of 8 and 9, you not only get a matchup with a team that has a closer record to you, but you know this, the Aztecs will be waiting for you in the quarterfinal round. But Fresno State will cross that bridge if and when they get there. So we'll see how things play out as we wrap up the regular season this week and next week. But again, tomorrow, the women on 790 and the men on 940. Also, Paul is out at World Ag Expo in Tulare. Just wrapped up today, 11 to 2. He'll do the same tomorrow and Thursday. Coaches are out there. Hutt was out today sporting a cowboy hat. Nice look for Hutt. And Paul will continue with everything on both Wednesday and Thursday. Matter of fact, tomorrow Paul will have 11 to 2 in Tulare, and then he and Q will head to San Jose for that game tomorrow night. We'll talk to Q on his way to San Jose as they get ready for that. All right, today our good friend Andrew Martin is up. Long intro after my long intro to get us to him. Sports director at 24 and 47. Host of Bulldog Insider, 6 o'clock on 24. The Olympics, horseshoes, slow dancing, hand grenades, all the things that you would want from a sports director. It is Andrew Martin. Andrew, how you doing?
Hand grenades? Hi, Tony.
Not with the pin pulled. I'm talking about it only counts. Close.
Well,
only counts.
Thank you for clarifying.
You know this. It's slow dancing, right? Horseshoes and hand grenades. That's the axiom. You know that, right? I didn't mean to imply at all that you're walking around with armories aplenty with you. That's not what I meant.
I'm sorry. Negative connotation, though. Yeah. One of them comes with a negative.
Well, okay. I clarify. I think most people knew where I was going, but okay, you're right. I guess I should clarify that you are not Rambo out there. At least not last time I checked, right? Is that
fair to say? That'd be awesome. I'd love to be Rambo. So Sylvester Stallone. This generation has been robbed of Sylvester Stallone as an action hero. I mean, people look at Rocky right now and they don't think of him. You know, they think of a remake. They don't look at Rambo and, oh, man. I mean, those I did a mock.
I didn't mean to have you waxing nostalgic about that. Which Rocky are we up to now? What is it, like Rocky 19? This is the one when Rocky fights incontinence. Isn't that it? Isn't that the one?
I stopped watching okay. after Rocky 3, Tony. But I did a mock, in sweats, running up the stairs, not in Philadelphia, but I forget what city it was. It was like 5-6 years ago. And I had like three people just look at me like, what are you doing? You're just crazy. So a whole generation is robbed of that vintage stuff.
Hold on a second. Look, we've got other things to get to, so I apologize profusely. I didn't mean to imply in any way, shape, or form that you are somehow out there. Except I do know with horseshoes and slow dancing, you're a big fan. But so you reenacted Rocky Balboa, but
yes.
not in Philadelphia. Okay, so like where were you?
Correct.
That you, huh?
I think it was Chicago. I don't remember, but I just saw some.
The waters they were looking at you strange. Just honestly.
Okay, but it's still an iconic moment in cinema history.
Okay, well that's good. I mean that's glad. So it, like you go to Jersey and you try to mock up crossing the Golden Gate Bridge on foot. Is that the kind of thing you do? Go to Vegas and take the fake Eiffel Tower and tell people you're in Paris. Is this what you do now? Is that part of your deal?
Well, there is an Eiffel Tower in Vegas and
yes.
in Paris.
Let's get to watch this segue to basketball. Watch this, okay?
Speaking Vegas Mountain West Tournament. Here we go.
Speaking of the Eiffel Tower, the other day, and I've forgotten which NBA player it was, tried to refer to Rudy Gobert and called him the Eiffel Tower when he is, of course, because he is of French heritage, he is the Stifel Tower because he is a great defender, and this NBA player referred to him as the Eiffel Tower, so evidently didn't realize the play on words that was there, Andrew. So there you go. You can go ahead and use that on the insider anytime you'd like. All right, this will all come out in editing before the podcast. What?
As soon as there's a Fresno State connection, I'll find a way to work it into Insider. How's that?
Okay, that's good.
Unless it was Paul George or Tyler Johnson who said it. And I hope Tyler Johnson gets another chance someplace else. But between you and me, Tony, I feel like his career is done after this season, even if he latches on for another couple of months or whatever it is. But the guy, I mean, he's made $50 million. He was the benefit a few years ago of a very favorable contract for players. It's just unfortunate that he's kind of limped to the finish. But he had a great career at Fresno State, and he was able to make it in the NBA even for a brief while. So kudos to him. And if he doesn't get another opportunity past this season, at least he's got plenty of money to retire on.
Well, look, you are absolutely right about that, okay? There's no way in the world that let's look at Tyler Johnson toward the end of his Fresno State career. He was an outstanding player here, Andrew. I know that game against Air Force in the conference tournament.
In the tournament.
Stands out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he also was undrafted, and I think in a lot of ways Tyler has become kind of the poster child for those that are not heavily recruited, those that are not thought of to be a draft choice in a league that has only two rounds. And yet, like you said, he not only came out with an opportunity because of 10-day contracts, etc., he earned his way to that deal that the Heat gave him. And right now, even though he was cut by Phoenix, he knew it was coming. And look, you know this. The Suns aren't going anywhere. I saw them last night, and they played hard and got killed by 25. It's an opportunity for Tyler Johnson to latch on somewhere. I was talking to Paul about it yesterday, Andrew. I don't think the Warriors this year would do it, and that would put him back at home. And I only say that because the Warriors right now are just trying to fill out the roster. I mean, last night, I get home, and I DVR'd Iguodala's return, even though Andre lives in the Bay Area still, his return to the Warriors as he played with the Heat last night. And I didn't recognize half the guys the Warriors had put on their roster, because since they moved the guys out in the Russell deal, there's hardly anybody left. So they're not going to bring a Tyler Johnson in my opinion, at this point. They're just going to play out this year. But the two LA teams, because Collison did not, or at least has not yet decided to come back. He said he considered it, but that because of issues with his family and also what he lives his life by faith-wise, he did not want to come back to the NBA right now. Now, that might change by the time playoffs get here. But, Andrew, it's a fair guess that if there is an opening on one of the L.A. teams, even if it's just rent a player, Tyler Johnson may find himself in the playoffs this year. You just never know. But he's a great guy, and it's a wonderful story that he's been able to make that money. And I know some people had eyebrows raised when his contract came up with the Heat. But, Andrew, look at the contracts now.
Well,
it's not nearly
story
as outrageous as it seemed at the time, right?
Yeah, Tony, when he signed that $50 million contract, he was the headline on ESPN.com. There was that photo of him in a pool with just a big smile on his face, and we know how many times he's had his teeth knocked out. He looks like a hockey player, for crying out loud. But he just had a big, you know, I think one tooth missing grin. And then they explained, obviously, about why he was getting that type of money and why, you know, the Miami Heat, you know, were forced to give it to him because the Brooklyn Nets were, you know, potentially going to match that deal, and he might have been in Brooklyn instead of Miami. You know, Tyler Johnson, and I think I've said this before, but he reminds me a lot of Clifton Smith, you know, who was a guy out of Fresno State. And this is one of my favorite, you know, rags to riches stories. And Clifton Smith didn't last very long in the NFL. But he was a guy who worked really hard, you know, local kid, you know, certainly in the Valley, worked really hard at Fresno State and didn't get drafted, but yet ended up on a practice squad. And when he got his opportunity, his rookie season, I believe it was 2008 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he made the most of it. He was mostly a special teams guy, but he was so electric and he scored so many touchdowns that he made the Pro Bowl after being on the practice squad for, I think, the first like 10 weeks of the season. That's unheard of. And so that's the success story that I look at when I see a guy like Tyler Johnson, who, as you mentioned, Tony, was undrafted, you know, went to summer league in Orlando and was just able to, you know, just keep working hard. He was playing in, I think, Sioux Falls, South Dakota in I think it was still the D League at the time. Now it's been renamed the G League. But he got his 10-day contract and his opportunity, and he made it stick. And, you know, he was on a team with Dwayne Wade in Miami, who, you know, was talking about him as if it was his brother. I mean, Tyler Johnson is a, you know, just a good, down-to-earth, nice guy who works hard. I had a chance to interview him last year when he was back for Quincy Pondexter's camp, and he's just very appreciative of all the opportunities that have come his way. And most guys know, you know, because the average lifespan of a professional athlete is only a few years. So most guys know they're not going to have, you know, 10, 12, 15-year, you know, lifespans in whatever league they decide to play. You know, same thing is probably true of Aaron Judge. I mean, we'd all love to see, you know, the big three, you know, Judge, Derek Carr, and Paul George, although George has already played for a significant period of time, and so is Derek Carr. But we'd all love to see those guys play for, you know, 15 years, you know, in those three, you know, sports. But that's not the average lifespan for a quarterback or for any of those players. But for a quarterback especially, you know, there's obviously a lot of talk that everybody's seen about the Raiders possibly moving on from Derek Carr. Well, he was just drafted in 2014. You know, Josh Rosen, for crying out loud, may be a journeyman, and he was just drafted, you know, in 2018. So you just never know. Tyler Johnson's always been that humble, down-to-earth guy who's been appreciative of all the opportunities he's had because he's worked for it. You know, unlike the Derek Carrs, Paul Georges, and Aaron Judges of the world, again, not being drafted changes the game for you. So I don't want to spend, you know, certainly the whole hour talking about Tyler Johnson, but if this is it for him in terms of opportunities, he certainly make the most of his. And I think a lot of people will, you know, remember him fondly, certainly for his time at Fresno State.
You're correct, but he is going to get other chances. He is going to be a guy who's going to fill a role coming off the bench, and it'll be more than likely for a championship-caliber team, one of the missing pieces to the puzzle. And again, let's take a look at what happens with both teams playing their home games at Staples Center and how they try to fill in if Collison does indeed hold to his word about not coming back. All right, Andrew, let's get to Fresno State of current vintage. For the men, it was another frustrating day, and there have been times, a few of them, where I knew Williams hit a big shot against New Mexico, all that kind of stuff, that the team has been able to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. More times than not, it's been the other way around. Is this just one of those years and requisite to the growing pains you have with a young team, or is there something about this team that is a little bit more worrisome for you going forward? The talent appears to be there, but what about it? Let's assume at the end of this year that they're not going to win four straight in Las Vegas, which is what it's going to take. That would be a wonderful story. But what do you view as the upside going to November of 2020 as they get started for next year? Is it the core, the Robinsons, the Hyders, the Campbells, guys like that, that you know, are going to lead this team forward? I mean, where are you at? You've got a quartet of guys, as you know, Andrew, with Glover included, that would appear to be the future of this team. Is the future as bright as people hope it is with this team?
You'd like to think so. You know, and I mean, in addition to the guys who seem to be stepping up almost every night now, obviously Anthony Holland has proven his worth.
Right.
You know, certainly Jordan Campbell will be getting, you know, I know you mentioned him, but he hasn't been seeing as many minutes as we probably will see from him next season. You know, a lot of it had to do with that eligibility thing, and they were just kind of working him into the fold. But also, they have other talented guys that play those same positions. And so you'd like to not give up on this season, but I think that, you know, if we're being realistic, Fresno State needs to build for the future. And last year under, you know, year one with Justin Hudson and company, they win 23 games, but they relied heavily on the seniors last year. And, you know, not to say anything bad about New Williams, Noah Blackwell, and Nate Grimes, but I do think that last year's seniors, Deshaun Taylor, Braxton Huggins, and Sam Bittner, had a bit more of an impact on the program during their senior years than the current seniors. Not to say that those guys haven't had good games and that they, you know, don't mean a lot to this program, but we're just not seeing it on a consistent basis. And we've been saying that for weeks. We've been saying that for months. I mean, Nate Grimes can continue to rebound, but he didn't score a single point in that game against UNLV over the weekend. Now, I do think that Fresno State should have won. I don't know if I would have taken that shot if I was New Williams with about 20 seconds left, but the Bulldogs played really good defense. They were just the victims of, you know, Marvin Coleman's off-balance bank shot, which probably isn't going to go in, you know, seven times, maybe eight times out of 10. So I do think the Bulldogs should have won on Saturday, but I don't know what to expect from tomorrow night, to be honest, and I don't, you know what to expect from Saturday's game against Utah State when they faced, you know, the Aggies in Logan earlier this season. They took that team to, you know, extra time, but lost that game. It's going to be really, really tough for Fresno State to make a run in Las Vegas. I know you and I were talking off air about how, you know, the expectation at this point probably is that the Bulldogs will be in that 8-9 matchup. So in addition to potentially having to win four games in 4 days, they're going to potentially have to face San Diego State pretty quickly if they're able to, you know, do well in that first game. And so, you never want to have an early exit in the tournament. You never want to be staring a long, you know, off season in the face after, you know, last year they probably should have been in the postseason, you know, when they got snubbed for an NIT berth. But yeah, to answer your question, I think they build around the positives from this season. You know, you've got guys like Robinson and Hyder and Holland and Campbell and Hart, who's played really well the last few games. I mean, he had that career game against Colorado State last week. He had 15 on Saturday against, you know, UNLV. He's seeing a lot more minutes right now, and he's contributing a lot more. I do think they can still get some, you know, get some good minutes out of Mustafa Lawrence and Hassan Juf. I mean, it's basically just getting this group more comfortable, you know, going into a second year for the guys who are freshmen, who will be sophomores, getting them, you know, a second year under, you know, Coach Hudson's, you know, system, et cetera. But, I mean, these things happen. I mean, even San Diego State, and one of the things that we have to keep reminding ourselves is since Fresno State joined the Mountain West Conference, the Bulldogs, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, are the only team to get a bye in the Mountain West tournament in each of those seasons since Fresno State joined the Mountain West. And that's going back to 2012. Even San Diego State, which right now is obviously the cream of the crop in the conference, has not gotten a bye every single year since Fresno State joined the conference. And so these things go in cycles. If it means that Fresno State has a little bit of a dip, you know, in a down year this year, then there's no reason to expect that the Bulldogs can't bounce back, you know, next year and compete. You know, the one thing that I will say is, yes, the Bulldogs are finding ways to lose games that they could win, but it's not like, with the exception of, you know, that Boise State game, for example, which was just an embarrassment, and everyone will tell you that associated with the program, it's not like, for the most part, they're getting blown out every single night. They are losing a few games by double digits. Colorado State comes to mind, but they're also playing games that are close. You know, UNLV both times, you know, it was close. I mean, that game went to double overtime when it was in Fresno at the Save Mart Center in December. The last time they played Utah State, which was also that same week, that was a close game that went, you know, into an overtime. And so I feel like if Fresno State is not able to, you know, to get over the hump right now, there's no reason to think that the Bulldogs can't use these experiences as learning experiences and work on that in the offseason, in the summer, getting ready for next year. So you don't want to completely write off this season, because you never know. Maybe they do get hot and they could win a couple of games in Las Vegas. But I think the assumption is that, you know, the way that these games have gone, that their season is probably going to end at some point during the Mountain West Tournament.
Well, look, you're right on all counts, Andrew, and this is why, all kidding aside, I brought up as you were coming up close, because this team has been close. And if you want to get back to the game of glass half full or half empty, you can say, all right, this team, if you want to take the downside of it, this team plays the immortal words of Bill Walsh about Steve DeBerg, right? Just well enough to get you beat, all right? If you want to take that kind of view of this team, I suppose you can look statistically at it and you can back that up. The flip side, the optimistic side of this, is the 49ers season that we just saw. The year before, Andrew, great expectation for the 49ers that things were going to go really well. Now, Garoppolo got hurt early on, but everybody saw this last year that Garoppolo is not the key difference maker on the team, but injury, starting with him, turned them into a disaster. It also gave them a higher draft choice because of it, but it was week after week. Yeah, on occasion they were blown out. They would find a way to lose games, and so you said to yourself, okay, if you are close, then the tweak that you have to make to close the deal is within your control. And this last year, we saw what happened. And, you know, with 9 minutes to go, they had a 10-point lead and the football and a chance to win a Super Bowl. I bring it up because if Fresno State does learn from this, and if they're able to close the deal on so many of the games that have gotten away this year, then this was a worthwhile experience. That's something we're going to view only in retrospect. Right now, I know for the hardcore fan, even the peripheral fan, and for the coaching staff and the players, this has been extraordinarily frustrating, because time after time, with the occasional blowout thrown in, time after time, they're right there on the doorstep. I mean, you talk about being competitive. San Diego State, hopefully, is going to get a very high seed. They may be the only team to even make it to the NC2A in the Mountain West. If the Aztecs go ahead and sweep through and win the conference tourney, that's probably what's going to happen. Andrew, they're going to get a high seed. They've got a regional that would be in Los Angeles. It's a team that could make a legitimate run, maybe to an Elite Eight. I don't know they can get any farther than that. But that's a team that Fresno State, as you know, played early. Both games by Quirk of Conference were right at the start of January. Andrew, they were in both games. They were under double digits with 6 minutes to go in these games. So can you say with some justification that if this team could get out of its own way, this would be a pretty good team, so next year it ought to be a really good team? Or is that just way, way too optimistic for you?
No, I think that's a logical way to look at it. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to predict that Fresno State would be able to beat San Diego State this year, because you get down to this point in the season, and look, San Diego State's going to make the NCAA tournament regardless of what happens the rest of the way. If the Aztecs were to lose, you know, from this point on until Selection Sunday, and they don't win again, they're still getting into the NCAA tournament. But because they're playing right now for a number one seed, I think that's enough motivation for them not to lose, because they're obviously in the midst of the greatest season that San Diego State has ever had. I mean, you know, for any team to go undefeated this late in the season, it doesn't matter how many opponents you play that are D2, D3, NAIA, it doesn't matter. It is tough to win, you know, every single game that you face. And so kudos
to San Diego State. Do you think they'll get a one seed? Let me stop you right there, Andrew. Do you think if they go undefeated the rest of the way, will the powers that be, the NC2A, since we've seen the negativity toward the Mountain West exemplified in football and other areas, will the big boys making the decision about other big boys are they going to look at San Diego State and say, on the basis of that record, this is a conference that at one point had five teams in several years back, it's good enough to give them a one seed, knowing that there's a regional in Los Angeles which could give them a tremendous fan advantage?
I think you have to. I think you have to give them a one seed if they're undefeated. But you don't have to put them in that regional. You can put Gonzaga in that regional. But Gonzaga, like San Diego State, even though, you know, certainly the Zags have, have proven it more consistently. That's not true.
Yeah, they have history on their side a little bit, though.
Exactly.
You're right about that. They have been more nationally credible longer now,
yes.
No doubt about it.
I think, and I think most people are in agreement that right now, if the season were to end today, you take the four, you know, best teams in the country, which are Baylor, Kansas, San Diego State, and Gonzaga, in whatever order you want to put them in, and those will be your four number one seeds. If San Diego State loses a game, I don't think they get a number one seed. They might even not get a number two seed. They might drop to a three or a four. But if they're undefeated, how do you keep them out? I mean, how do you justify keeping a team out that would be – I mean, gosh, they're, how many games do they have left? Five, eight, they have to potentially play. I mean, they'd be, what, 31, 32 and 0, something like that? How do you keep a team like that out of a number one seed? I mean, that would be egregious if they did something like that. And plus, look at it this way. San Diego State has also been ranked in the top, you know, five for the last, you know, what, 4 weeks, and they've been in the top 10 for like 3 weeks before that. So it's not like you're taking a team. Like, remember when Michigan was unranked and made that jump all the way into the top five? That would be something that people would be like, oh, wait a second, this makes no sense. Where San Diego State has been and what they've been doing, you know, by constantly winning with all this pressure and attention on them now, I think if they're undefeated, you have to give them a number one seed. It's not even a debate.
Fair enough. Need to take a break. Come back more with Andrew as we take you to 3 o'clock. Bulldog Hour continuing on this Tuesday on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Buddy, welcome back. 2:35, Bulldog Hour to 3. Then time for Christopher and Gonzo, CGP to 6 o'clock tonight. Basketball, both teams on our air, on our airs, if you'd like, tomorrow. It's A-I-R-S, as the women are on 790, 6 o'clock tip at Save Mart Center against San Jose State. The men, 7 o'clock tip on 940 at the Event Center in San Jose, 6:15. Paul and Coach Q will have the pre for you. Gonzo will have the game on 790. Also, Paul is in Tulare 11-2. He was today and will be tomorrow and Thursday for World Ag Expo. And then when he wraps that up, he and Q will head up to San Jose and then right back home. And I'll tell you what, we've had a couple of years where the weather has been less than great for World Ag. This is not that kind of year. This is absolutely wonderful weather, though we could use a little bit of rain at some point, just not during this week. It is a glorious February afternoon and will be, so I hope you go out there. I mentioned that Paul and Hutt were out today, and Hutt had a cowboy hat on, a good look for him. There's no doubt about it, and I know a lot of the coaches will be out there for the next couple of days. Stop by and see everybody, 11-2 on air, leading right into this show. Talking with our good friend Andrew Martin, as always, the sports director of 24 and 47, and the host of Bulldog Insider on 24, which is at 6 o'clock at this time of year during the football season. It follows Sunday night football. Andrew, we addressed Fresno State basketball in the short time we have remaining. I want to get back to football because, as we've mentioned many times in the 10 years or so that you have been on air with me, that you've been in this market, you came from Boise, although you are not from Boise. You're a Jersey guy and from Syracuse, but you were on a professional level in Boise prior to coming here. So you have the perspective. Talking to Paul about this yesterday, you know, at the end of last week, and it was quiet in many respects, the Mountain West decided, a mutual decision between they and Boise State, that Boise State would drop the lawsuit and, for the time being, the conference would allow the deal to stand that says that Boise State can negotiate their home game separately. I think most people know by now that was a deal that was put in place when there was a concern that Boise was leaving to go to the Big East. San Diego State was rumored at that time as well. So it went through that contract, and it is in place to the tune of about $1.8 million extra Boise will get for this one with Fox involved. But where the conference said this would be the last one, they have now backed away. Question number one, are you surprised that the conference backed away because it is perceived as acquiescence, or was it, in your opinion, a prudent move no matter what the motivation might have been to keep the lawsuit out of the public eye? What about it?
Well, I definitely think that keeping the lawsuit out of the public eye was priority number one, but keeping Boise State happy should be priority 1A and probably 1A, if that's even a thing. I know this probably isn't going to make the other, you know, 11 teams in the conference happy when it comes to football, but I said this a few weeks ago, and I even asked Kalen DeBoer about this when he was in studio for Bulldog Insider at the end of January. It's like, look, we all get it. You know, I mean, Boise State is a brand, you know, a national brand. And it used to be because of that. And I told you this, I grew up in New Jersey, Tony. And in the, you know, mid to late 90s, you know, I knew what Boise State was. You know, to me, it was that program with the cute little blue turf that was always on TV, you know, late at night. And that's how it was when I was in college in the early 2000s. I graduated in 2003. And at that point, I was like, okay, this is when that program is starting to become, you know, like a true powerhouse. And, you know, without opening up an old wound, I mean, you could point to that game against Fresno State in 2001 when Boise State really started to make a name for itself. But for at least the last two decades, Boise State has been a, you know, a team that has either been on the rise or a perennial top 25 team. And so having the Boise State brand in your conference benefits the conference. I would argue that overall right now, the, you know, the American has more teams that have had, you know, that type of sustained success recently in getting to those New Year's Six games. I mean, we saw, you know, Memphis do it this past year. We've seen UCF do it. Houston, Cincinnati, you know, those teams seem to be ranked in the top 25. And with the exception of, I believe, Air Force this season, it's basically been Boise State and then somebody else. You know, Fresno State was obviously ranked, you know, in 2018. But even that year, Boise State, I believe, was also ranked. So the bottom line is this. The conference needs Boise State. And as much as the other coaches and athletic directors probably don't want to hear it or talk about it, it is beneficial to the conference to keep Boise State happy, because having Boise State in the conference means that every other institution gets raised, right? I mean, we've all heard that cliche, you know, a rising tide raises all ships. Well, if Boise State is going to a New Year's Six game, or Boise State, is bringing in, you know, the eyeballs nationally, I mean, look at it this way. Every time Fresno State and Boise State play in football, that game is on ESPN or ESPN2. It's usually moved to a Friday night, but that game is on, you know, a major network. It's not on, you know, Root Sports. It's not on, you know, ESPN3. Well, right. Well, it's not on CBS Sports. It's...
Yeah, Andrew, I agree with you, and I understand all of that. And look, I painstakingly tried to make this clear. I have great respect for Boise State. My issue is this, and you just kind of brought it up. I understand. You talk about 2001. I've just mentioned the other day, Bulldogs were 6-0, 8 in the country. Boise State was 3-3. If you ever see that game on ESPN Classic, it was all about Fresno State, and the assumption was the Bulldogs were on their way to a magical season, and it got taken apart after a great start by Fresno State on that Friday night here in town. So, yes, Boise State, from that point on, it has been a leaping off that we've seen now for almost 20 years, and I give them all due credit. But my whole deal is this, twofold, and you can address it, because you have the experience there. One is the fact that while they have been nationally prominent, they have not been that New Year's Six school year after year after year. You brought
right
about
right
the American Conference situation, and that's true. The other thing is, and maybe more to the point, my issue with this, you can threaten to leave. It's almost like a relationship. You know, if you're going to say, you know what, if things don't change, I'm going to leave. Okay, you can say it. But do you really mean it? When someone says, there's the door, go out and discover America, all right? If you're telling me that you're going to leave, that you don't like it, at some point you have to say, are you saying it because you're trying to somehow solicit something from me that I haven't been able to give you before, whether it's security, financially, whatever it is that you want, okay? Or is there a legitimacy to this, that you are just that unhappy and you're trying to stay for the benefit of everybody, but I just won't allow you to stay? Those are two different issues, Andrew, because one says that Boise State is posturing. The other says that they're saying, if you change our deal that we agreed upon in our opinion in perpetuity, and I don't know if the league felt it was that way or not, then you know what? We have to go, and we have somewhere to go. So I will ask you, where does Boise State have to go in regard to what Pat Hill told us a long time ago when I asked him about all the pork belly trading that was conference affiliation that has simmered down to the point that it's almost non-existent now, the moves? Pat brought up, he said, hey, only two winners so far, Utah and TCU, former conference mates of Fresno State that went from Group of Five to Power Five, and the commensurate money that goes along with it. So, Andrew, I will tell you, not to demean anything in the American Conference. That, to me, is a lateral move. If Boise State says, we've had enough, and when these negotiations take place, if they are indeed going to talk again, they say either you grant this to us in perpetuity, our right to negotiate our home game separately, or we're out of here. If the conference says, then go, where is Boise State going to go? Where do they have to go that is legitimately better than where they're at now?
Well, and let me also mention, too, you know, saying that TCU and Utah are the only winners. BYU also left the conference, went independent, and for a while there was playing mostly Mountain West schools. So I don't think BYU got the return that, you know, that the Cougars were hoping for either. I don't know what the answer to that question is, because it doesn't seem like one of the major conferences is, you know, opening the door for Boise State at this point. But we also don't know what types of conversations have been had behind the scenes saying, hey, you know, I'm, you know, taking the role of Boise State here. Hey, we're thinking about splitting from the Mountain West Conference. If we, I know you can't say anything formally because that would be some type of collusion, but if we do step aside, would you be willing to admit us? There would be a home for Boise State. Some conference would be interested in Boise State, and there would probably be a conference better than, you know, Conference USA or the Sun Belt, something like that. Something that is, you know, maybe.
Well, it would have to be AAF, right? I mean, isn't that really?
Well, it would have to be.
And this is my question to you. We've talked about, you bring up Conference USA. Remember the, first of all, it was the ungainly conference that became the WAC that really caused all of this movement. If they wouldn't have expanded to 16 since Fresno State, and it's the thing that galls me more than anything else, the fact that the Bulldogs were admitted to the original WAC as a single entrant, one team and one team only, meaning one school only, Fresno State, for across the board in all sports. Then, I said before, that was reserve seating, and then it turned into festival seating, and a lot of the schools you tried to get away from when you left the Big West suddenly showed up at your doorstep again, and the original powers that play said, you know,
that was also the
we're
case
out of here, you know?
That was also,
and that's how the Mountain West was born. So, go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
And that was also the case in the Mountain West. When Fresno State left the Mountain West, you have all these schools following them, right? So Fresno State left Nevada, which was the year after Boise State, and then you have San Jose State and Utah State following them again.
Yeah, but that was different because they needed to fill to 12. What I'm saying is the original WAC, at least the excuse, is it. And look, maybe the wanderlust for BYU and Utah was always there, okay? But I'm just saying the justification was, you know what, we invited you in and you became part of this voting mess that caused us to get too big too fast. We didn't want to go to a huge conference. Therefore, we broke away to try to reform the original WAC with the Mountain West. When that happened, Andrew, it put Fresno State right back in this scramble mode with everybody else that initially they tried to get away from. What I'm getting right now is going into that kind of situation again, which was the rumor of a 24-team or 22-team, whatever it was, Conference USA, amalgamation, whatever it might have been, or what's going on with the American Conference, et cetera. If you could take the cream of the crop of the conferences and just put them together, you would have something. But to start to say, okay, because of relationships, long-standing ones, everybody's coming along from the Mountain West, everybody's staying in place in the American Conference, and we're going to put together a big grouping, to me that is not beneficial. It's not beneficial from travel, for credibility, whatever. And I don't think you can take the cream of the crop from both and get a singular conference together, because even though from a sports point of view, we like that idea. You know, university presidents don't care for that, do they?
No, and it would be a logistical nightmare, too. And, you know, when Boise State and San Diego State were being considered for the Big East, my first thought was, all right, well, I guess for those schools it would be good to be, because at the time it was still one of those, you know, power conferences. But think about the travel, right? I mean, if you have to go, if right now in the American, if Boise State is playing, you know, UCF, if Boise State is playing Memphis, if Boise State is playing Cincinnati, you know, yes, I know that when you're a college program in Division I, you charter to those places, but it's still not easy to get to when you have to go several time zones over, but also for the fans. You know, I mean, what's really cool about Fresno State, you know, being in its current situation is, you know, that within conference every year, you can drive to two of those games, right? Between San Jose, Reno, Las Vegas, and San Diego, those are drivable games.
Right.
I mean, we do it when we're going to cover games, and so fans can make that trip. If you go to a conference where you have to get on a plane every single time, what fan base do you expect to show up on the road? And so that would be a completely selfish move.
Well, what about
for the program?
Okay, what about the AAC? But what about the AAC, Andrew? Just the cream of the crop there. Could you make a justification that you could put together a conference where, yes, you're going to travel, but it's not going to be 4 or 5 times. You're going to cross over a couple of times, but just try to take the best. Could you do that, or does it not work that way? You see what
honest,
I'm getting
Tony,
at? Stay more geographically, yeah. But have by agreement a couple of crossovers with, you know, the Central Floridas, people like that. Could that work?
I don't think so because, A, I don't think that there are enough teams in that conference. I think it's top-heavy, just like the Mountain West seems to be. You know, and I would certainly put Fresno State in that, you know, in that portion of the top-heavy characteristic. You know, certainly not last year, but, you know, over, you know, going back to 2012, for the most part, with the exception of those down years, I think Fresno State has the ability to be in the top half. But I also think the AAC is top-heavy. And so you also don't know several years out, or even just in the current year when you're scheduling these games, you don't know how good a team is going to be. I mean, heck, I was talking to Jamie White yesterday about San Jose State, you know, switch it up a little bit to women's basketball here. But San Jose State, which is coming to the Save Mart Center tomorrow, that is a, you know, they're billing it as a battle for first place. It really isn't because Fresno State has, you know, enough of a lead that if the Bulldogs lose, they're still going to be in first place. But San Jose State was picked to finish 11th in the conference this year in women's basketball. And right now the Spartans are second. So, you know, if Fresno State, let's say, or Boise State in this scenario would not face Cincinnati, you know, because that would be too difficult to travel to. They also have to go to Memphis, for example, or Houston. Well, what if Cincinnati turns out to be the best program, you know, in that conference on that given year? Why wouldn't you want your best teams to be able to play those
right.
teams? And so I don't think you can do that. I think if you're putting a team in a conference, you are having the same rotation like what the Mountain West does. And so, you know,
so
it's
no
unfortunate
flex
that
scheduling.
Boise State is not on the yeah,
which
I don't
you
think
you can
do that.
Basketball.
I don't think you can do that in football.
Right,
if
but the Conference
I don't
USA
think
has tried it.
Yeah.
Okay, bottom line for me in the last couple of minutes here. Back to Boise State. My perception is what's going to happen here is after the rhetoric is done, and maybe it's done for a while publicly, that what's going to happen is there's not going to be a lawsuit, of course, but there's also not going to really be further discussion beyond just the casual one, which means we're going to end up with A, Boise State staying right where they are, B, the conference saying, you know what, as long as a national network, whether it's ESPN or in this case Fox, wants to negotiate separately, fine, and will allow the marketplace to determine it. So Boise State in that way will be winners in that they're going to continue to keep it the way it is as long as a network wants to do that, and the conference benefits by having Boise State. In other words, status quo after all of this bluster. Is that the bottom line?
I think so. You know, I mean,
long term, not just right now, but long term.
There's
really not going to be a revisiting of import about this. That was an excuse to get away from this.
I think what this was both sides trying to flex their muscles. Boise State saying we're bigger than the conference. The conference saying, no, you're not. And the fact that the conference is now apparently acquiescing to Boise State means that both sides have come to the agreement that, you know what? You know, individually, we're not as powerful as we think. Let's work together because the conference wants Boise State in the conference. And I do think that Boise State wants to be in the Mountain West because it benefits Boise State. I mean, obviously, you know, all the schools are regional, with the exception of Hawaii, which is just very difficult to travel to regardless. But on any given year, Boise State is going to be there at the end of the year. If they go to the, you know, American, you know, or let's say I mean, I'm sure they want to get to a Power 5 conference at some point, but that's not realistic at the moment. If they go to another conference and they are not the best team in that conference, then they're not going to get to a New Year's Six game. They know they have a chance to do that if they win all their games in the Mountain West, and not even just the Mountain West, their non-conference schedule. If they didn't lose to BYU, they would have been that team instead of Memphis that was playing in the, I think it was the Orange Bowl, right, this past year. The only reason they weren't is because they didn't take care of their own business. But their schedule was strong enough and they were ranked high enough that if they had won all their games, they would have been that team. And they know that their path to get to a New Year's Six game is perfectly fine and unencumbered where they currently are. They just have to win.
All right, 10 seconds, Andrew. Will we ultimately see an attempt for a P6, a Power 6 conference with the group of fives just trying to find a cream of the crop conference affiliation be damned? Yes or no?
My gut says no. My gut says no. I don't see it happening anytime in the near future.
Stay tuned. You never know. Andrew, appreciate it, my friend. Be watching 24 and 47. Take care. We'll see you.
All right. Thanks, Tony. Have a good one.
All right, guys. Good friend, Andrew Martin. We'll take a break, wrap it up, get you ready for CG and Gonzo momentarily on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.